All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. I mean, I told you this before, that I had a clinical supervisor years ago who used to say, if you know how to treat OCD, then you know how to treat anything. What she was saying was, like, any condition that operates a little bit like OCD. And it turns out, it so happens, that there's actually quite a number of conditions that operate just like OCD, right? And I'm not just talking about the anxiety-related disorders either, but I am talking about anxiety. So, like, generalized anxiety disorder or specific phobia, panic disorder, separation anxiety disorder, illness anxiety disorder, the list goes on. But then in addition to the anxiety-related disorders, there's also major depressive episodes. Lots and lots of these common mental health conditions are behaviorally run. And so they sort of depend upon the individual who's suffering from these symptoms to live a life in keeping with the symptoms in order to keep them happy and well-fed, right? We have to act depressed if we're going to stay depressed. That's a reality. And anybody who's just thought through that for a couple of minutes recognizes this, right? If you don't act depressed and you put that on repeat for a week or for 2 weeks or for 3 weeks or for a month or for a month and a half or 2 months, you don't act depressed, right? You engage your friends and you go out and you exercise, and you exercise vigorously for an hour a day, and you read your book and you participate in your hobbies, and you make sure you're eating breakfast and lunch and dinner, and you're getting up off the couch and you're getting out of the house and you're going to work and so on and so forth. And again, you're engaging this vigorous schedule, not just one day, but 2 days, and not just a few days, but a week, and not just a week, but a couple of weeks, and so on and so forth it goes. Depression relies on you acting depressed in order for you to stay depressed. And this is precisely the same principle upon which OCD works. You know, individuals who don't engage compulsions, who are disciplined and determined to identify and stop compulsions, again, not just once in a while or on one particular day or another, but they're really consistent about it over time. These are people whose OCD systems are methodologically weakening. OCD relies on the compulsive pattern in order to continue to pump anxiety into your head. You follow what I'm saying? And the same thing is true for trauma victims. Individuals who continue to experience intrusive memories relative to traumatic experiences, they avoid triggers as a way of managing their anxiety. It's the same idea again. Clinical trauma requires avoidance as a consistent pattern in order for the traumatic narrative to fail to be processed. Or to say that another way, in order for the anxiety to remain clinical and intense. It's all very mechanical and behavioral in that sense. And this is why I'm so often talking to you about the importance of identifying your compulsions. The reason is because compulsions are not always obvious. Like, they don't always wave their hands and jump up and down and say, hey, I'm part of the other team. Come stop me. You know, they don't do that. That's not the way OCD works. OCD is the king or queen of camouflage, and compulsions often hide in plain sight. OCD doesn't care about making sense to you, and it doesn't care about playing fair. It's not interested in adhering to the rules that you think are civilized. Anxiety disorders and OCD, they speak one language, and that language is domination. It wants to take over as much of your life as you will give it. And you give it your life by living like you're anxious. You see what I'm saying? So it's important to be looking for compulsions. And in my opinion, documenting what you're noticing only works to your advantage, right? When you find yourself feeling nervous and having intrusive thoughts, notice, what are you doing? This is one of those things. Like over the years in treatment, I've found that patients, generally speaking, patients who don't bother writing down what they're identifying in terms of compulsions, but they just kind of report, oh, I did it in my head, versus those who somewhat consistently write something down, whether they text it to themselves or they write it down on a formal ritual monitoring sheet or they write it down on a blank sheet or whatever it is, but then they bring it to session and they read the compulsions that they've identified in relationship to the intrusive thoughts that they've had. Those individuals who actually put ink to paper, so to speak, they write something down as opposed to, well, I did it in my head, they, for some reason, they tend to do better in therapy. And I would argue, and I don't necessarily know why this is, but I would postulate, I would argue that the reason is they're looking harder for compulsions. Like if you're writing something down and you're writing something down consistently, your brain over time starts to more carefully look for compulsions. You know, because you're trying to have stuff to write down. And so your eyes, as it were, are looking. Whereas the individual who says, oh, well, I did it in my head, that person isn't as disciplined and careful to look for the behaviors. So in disciplining yourself to look for the behaviors, not just one day, but 2 days and 3 days and a week and a couple of weeks, and over time, you're consistently disciplining yourself to look, you're going to get better at finding compulsions. And that's just the reality of it. It just follows that concept that individuals who work and try harder at something are probably over time going to get better and better at the individuals who aren't trying as hard. You know what I'm saying? It's just common sense. And so the individuals who are writing down compulsions are, generally speaking, going to have more success with finding them. And then they add to that the elbow grease of working to stop those behaviors. And this is really the nuts and bolts of making progress. So I'll tell you something. Over the years, I've found this to be true. It's not a particularly pleasant reality, but it is part of the game that the OCD plays. And again, when I say OCD, I'm not just talking about obsessive compulsive disorder, but I'm talking about clinical anxiety in general. So something that OCD will do, if I can say it this way, it's like flipping the shirt inside out. And so I'm not sure if I've told you the story before, but I had this patient I worked with years ago, probably maybe 8 years ago. And he had POCD. The P in POCD stands for pedophilic, right? So he had OCD relative to sexually taboo fears. His fear was that he was going to sexualize kids. And what that meant for him was he had all these And what that meant for him was that he had all these intrusive thoughts and intrusive images. They were very, very distressing for him. And so he would engage various compulsions, from avoidance to rumination, seeking reassurance, researching, and so on, as a way of managing the anxiety associated with or elicited by these intrusive thoughts. So he's in treatment, and we're talking through the definition of compulsion and how to begin to look for and find compulsions. And one of the compulsions that we end up clearly identifying is checking, right? Looking. He'll look at kids as a way of checking, am I aroused by that? Is that something that I want to do? And super, super anxiety producing process. But one of the ways he was working to manage his anxiety was by checking and therefore reassuring himself and disproving the thought that, ooh, maybe I want to have sex with a kid. Or so I said, well, let's identify that as a compulsion. Let's really work hard this week to stop checking, to stop looking. When you see a kid, let's really work hard to look away and don't give in to the urge to look, to check, to reassure yourself. And as I recall, he worked at a place where there was lots of kids and lots of families coming in the door, and there would be a lot of opportunity for him to see kids and to feel anxious and then to engage compulsions as a way of trying to manage the anxiety. But it was also, therefore, a lot of opportunity for him to resist and to stop compulsions. So he ends up having success with this, and he comes back the next week or the week after this or whatever it was, and he says, this is definitely helping. I feel much better than I did. Well, fast forward another couple of weeks, and the anxiety's coming back, and he seems to be visibly on edge in session and saying that it's like super, super anxious and whatever it is. The anxiety's back, right? So we start talking through, well, what is it that you're doing when you feel anxious? What's going on in terms of compulsions? And as he began to talk through what things look like for him behaviorally when he's anxious, it seemed like what he was saying was, well, when the kids come in the door and I notice the kids, I look away. And at first, that was like helping my anxiety. And it seemed like the thoughts weren't as distressing. But over the past couple of weeks, it seems like whenever I notice the kids and I look away, my anxiety seems to get worse. And I said to him, well, I wonder if looking away is a compulsion for you. And I remember he got like pretty irritated at me. And he said, well, you told me that looking at the kids was compulsive and that I should look away. Now you're telling me looking away is compulsive and I should therefore look at the kids. Like, I was getting better. I was feeling better. Now my anxiety is worse again. I'm confused. What am I supposed to do? And that was my first exposure, if you will, to the reality that sometimes OCD will flip itself around, turn the t-shirt inside out, and all of a sudden what was up is now down, and what was down is now up. And the very behavioral process by which you were working to starve the anxiety system and OCD is that by which now it's feeding itself. So the behavior that was in effect an exposure before is now a compulsion, and the behavior that was a compulsion before is now an exposure. If that makes sense. And this is case and point. This is why I don't simply identify compulsions for patients. I teach them how to do it themselves. Because the reality of the situation is the compulsions will move and shift and evolve over time. And OCD does that as a way of trying to keep itself alive when you're trying to snuff it out. Like I told you, it's really good at this. And so you have to be equipped with the skill of identifying the compulsion in real time on the ground floor, as I've often said to you, and then add to that identification the elbow grease and the determination, the fight to stop the behavior. Or another case, an individual who came into session sort of lamenting that she used to be a really different person and she used to engage all these different activities and do all this stuff. She was really, really busy and productive, and now her life is a skeleton of what it was, and she avoids so much of what she used to engage because when she goes and she does this or that, it always results in really high levels of intrusive thoughts and anxiety. And so her way of managing that, if you will, was to avoid all these situations and activities wherein she would likely have anxiety. That makes sense, right? So over the course of the case, we worked to begin engaging different behaviors and activities and routines that she had engaged before. And we did some exposure pieces, of course, with stopping the compulsions. And she made progress and she began to feel a lot better. But over time, what we began to notice was now engaging and engaging vigorously and engaging for long, long periods of time, which previously had been the exposure, which previously had been the healthy behavior for her to engage, now became the very means by which she was actually working to avoid anxiety. Well, the more I do this, the less I feel anxious. And so quite literally, these behaviors became a distraction from her symptoms. And slowly but surely, her anxiety began to creep back up and the OCD system began to get worse and worse again. This is why I tell you, you have to be able to identify the compulsion in real time, because that son of a bitch, OCD, will turn the t-shirt inside out and put it on backwards. And all of a sudden, that which was left is now right, and that which was right is now left. And you're confused and disoriented. You're tired from having fought this hard battle just to find now you got to turn around and go back the other way in order to continue making progress. That's what OCD does to everybody. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I would say work to identify and stop compulsions. I mean, that's a given. But the other side of it is, listen, man, you've got to work to write down what you're identifying. Write down the intrusive thought. What was the thought or image or urge that elicited your anxiety? And once you identified the intrusive thought and the resultant distress, what did you find yourself doing? Again, whether that was gritting your teeth, or that was bouncing your leg, or that was avoiding, or that was seeking reassurance, or that was researching, or it was ruminating, or whether it was a micro compulsion or a macro compulsion, whether it was something that was long-standing and habitual and idiosyncratic, or it was something that really felt like it was more stereotypic in terms of what OCD looks like to people. Like, whatever it was, notice that behavior and work to stop engaging that behavior. And it's one of those things where you're not going to do it perfectly. You're not going to stop compulsions perfectly. You're not going to identify compulsions perfectly. But over the course of consistently striving and working, you're going to get pretty good at identifying the compulsion and successfully stopping it. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.